state-owned entity Transnet announced that it has suspended yet another senior official, this time its former group supply chain officer, Mr. Edward Thomas. It is believed this is due to his alleged role in awarding contracts to companies that scored from the massive locomotive acquisition drive that saw the Gupta family earn more than 5 billion rand in kickbacks. This is, of course, days after the Transnet board terminated the employment of its CEO, Mr. Siyabonga Gama, and placed on suspension the chief procurement officer, Tamsanqa Giani, and supply chain manager, Lindiwe Mtleshe. Now, on the line to tell us more about the latest developments at Transnet is Professor Edward Kiesvetter, who is, of course, a board member. Mr. Kiesvetter, good evening. Welcome to the program.
Good evening.
Now, it looks as if you are in full swing in terms of cleaning up. Just take us through the chain of events that got us to Mr. Edward Thomas in terms of him being, fired. How did we get to him? Because we started off with the three key individuals. Then we moved on to the fact that Mr. Gama was now suspended because you had lost complete confidence in him. And of course, now you're moving lower down. So explain to us the process that the board is going through, and also the management to get to, all these kind of rotten apples, for lack of a better word.
Fine, Taylor. I mean, the context, as you would know, is that there is an ongoing investigation, forensic investigation. And as more and more information is uncovered and leads up to various individuals, we are very committed and determined to be decisive about the actions that are required in order to restore stability to the organization, but also to give very clear message about where we stand on the issue of any form of irregularity, corruption, and even criminal action. So in the case of Mr. Thomas, who at the time was, as you said, the group supply chain officer and subsequently moved into the position of general manager for finance, when his name surfaced in the investigation as having been integral to the level of impropriety, alleged impropriety, in the appointment of the consultants that you earlier referred to, namely Regiments, Trillium, and others. When Mr. Thomas was then confronted on the 25th of October and informed of the company's intention to suspend him, he was, as required, as part of the fair process, invited to make written representation as to why he should not be suspended.
Mr. Kiesvetter, just a quick etiquette issue for me. I'm not sure if you're speaking into the speaker, but your voice is distorting. If you could just speak directly into the phone so that we can hear you clearly.
I am speaking to someone, but
now it's much better. Thank you so very much. No, it's just that you are giving us such important information. I would hate for listeners to struggle to hear you, because I was struggling to hear you, and that's always my cue. So you were saying that on the 25th of October, you gave him an opportunity to explain himself. And, of course, what was the reaction? Did he give you the reasons, or did he ignore the process? What was his demeanor?
In the case of Mr. Thomas, he did make representation. And then when Transnet considered his representation, we were of the view that there wasn't sufficient reasons that we should not proceed with our original intention to suspend him. And he was therefore placed on suspension, and that's the notice that we made public yesterday. What will happen now in the case of Mr. Thomas, as is also the case for the other individuals you've mentioned, they will now be the subject of formal disciplinary inquiries to do the more substantive and formal investigation to determine exactly what the level of involvement were, and then we would take appropriate action.
Now, the individuals or the structures that are going to be set up to investigate these matters, how independent are they going to be? How capable are they going to be in terms of forensic capacity to make, you know, the necessary investigations? If one looks, for example, at the VBS heist report, if you look at the person that was appointed, he used really good forensic investigators that seized computers, telephones, made mirror images of the hard drive. So there was no hearsay involved. The documents are authentic. It's actual communication between the individuals. What kind of strengths are you looking for the people that need to, you know, consider the guilt or innocence of these individuals?
So clearly it is in everyone's interest that we follow the facts substantively and that we do not act purely on hearsay. So as I pointed out earlier, the forensic process is already underway.
Yes.
And I can tell you additional evidence surfaces all the time by other independent forensic investigators, by staff members who come forward and volunteer information, and then also by the actual forensic lawyers that are currently involved. So it is actually quite encouraging to see how more and more information percolates.
Mm.
To your specific point, obviously we follow hard, substantive evidence of email trails and limited communication and resolutions that were taken, signatures on documents and contracts that were awarded. So it is not just a wishy-washy or, you know, flimsy approach.
Yes.
And as is required in law, we would need to lead evidence.
Yes.
That leads us to a fairly level, and again, because this is disciplinary.
Yes.
There's a certain burden that is required that we have to meet.
Absolutely.
In terms of the other component of your question, we appoint. Obviously, the investigators on our behalf will lead evidence, but we also appoint independent, competent chair persons to lead these investigations, and the individuals concerned will equally have the opportunity to make their case personally and to have equally to be represented in these matters.
Mm-hmm. It's coming up for a 9:15. I'm in conversation with Transnet board member Professor Edward Kieswetter on the fact that we have now had the suspension of a former group supply chain officer, Mr. Thomas. And of course, this is following hot on the heels of the firing of Mr. Siyabonga Gama by the board for heading up the institution and allowing it to, in fact, become embroiled in the kind of irregularities that it stands accused of. Now, Mr. Kieswetter, one of the issues is, of course, the fact that people are fighting back. In as much as you are getting information, in as much as you are getting people who are coming forward, people are also digging in their heels. We saw, for example, with Mr. Moyane, there's a certain MO that almost all of these individuals are employing, and that is delaying tactics, questioning process, trying to evade actually getting to a forum where they answer. In the case of Mr. Gama, you kind of nipped it in the bud and you took a decision that he is not enjoying the confidence of the board. There's a breakdown of trust and you fired him. Why are you not doing the same with these individuals? Why is their processes different?
So again, you know, the board, the primary relationship that the board has with the organization is through its chief executive.
Yeah.
Firstly. Secondly, the chief executive, him or herself, is also a member of the board and therefore is held to a higher standard.
Mm.
In terms of not only the performance of the organization, but also the fiduciary accountability that they have, which is a position of trust. And so, understandably, the bar for a group chief executive in any company, and this is the view we took, is much higher. There has to be confidence and trust between the parties. In the case of employees or executives who report to the chief executive, the relationship is somewhat different. And therefore, we have decided to follow the disciplinary route, which is a process that will help us uncover the fact that I can give you the assurance, if the evidence suggests so, the outcome can be equally decisive and potentially, we obviously do not prejudice anyone, we do not run ahead of this, so I cannot tell you what the outcome of these investigations are, but safe to say that in situations like this, we will be guided by the recommendation of the chair of the disciplinary committee, and that could range anything from written warnings to other sanctions, including termination of service.
Now, there is an expectation from the electorate and just from citizens and from 702 landers. Earlier, we spoke about the fact that Mr. Moyane, for example, has been sacked. And, of course, SARS can now begin the process of recovery. But there's a question of criminal liability. And there's a question of, when is someone actually going to be arrested? When is someone actually going to face trial? And, of course, having to explain themselves in a court of law. There seems to be, with these processes, and you've gone through the processes procedurally, there's nothing wrong with it legally, but there seems to be almost this idea that if you have been dealt with by your company and they've decided that you have done wrong and they terminate your contract and they sack you, that that's the end of the story. But public monies are involved here. And there are, of course, possibilities of criminal proceedings. Without prejudging the matter, how do we move from internal company processes where, say, for example, the evidence take you to the fact that there was a criminal intent on, let's say, corrupting the organization, diverting monies and giving illegal contracts to people. What are the options that you have other than that, that you can exercise in Transnet? Can you go and lay charges against individuals?
Yes, of course. Of course. So let me just be clear that there are three streams of work. The first is there's an employment relationship with an individual.
Yes.
And we have to deal with that decisively.
Mm.
But when, by reason of a dismissal, a resignation, or any other form of separation between the parties comes about, that does not imply that the other investigations stop.
Mm.
So, for example, in the case of the chief executive, you would also have heard that we are in pursuit of the recovery of monies that we believe he, in his personal capacity, because this happened the way that it did, will be held accountable for. We will consider any other civil action against individuals where we believe they are held liable in their personal capacity. And that is true for everyone. So the two with whom we've already parted ways, the leader and the group chief executive, even though their employment has discontinued, the investigation into their involvement continues. And we work, but remember now, we are a board.
Yes.
We're not a prosecuting authority.
We're
not
an
investigating authority. So in that regard, we will continue to work with our attorneys and with the investigating authorities. And to the extent where the evidence leads us, we will lead and work and cooperate with the relevant authorities to pursue civil action as well as criminal action against every individual already employed, still employed in the company, individuals who have already left the company, or individuals who are dismissed or resigned during this process. So the fact that you are outside of the company now does not exonerate you or preclude you from being pursued in any other avenue of law. And so we can give you and South Africa at large the absolute clarity that dealing with the employment relationship is only one of three streams of work that we pursue.
Just a final question, Mr. Kiesvetter. The rot in Transnet. We're looking at, we've looked at the CEO, we've looked at some senior executives, but if one looks at a place like, let's say, Eskom, with all of those employees, the rot ran very deep, and the project to hollow out the institution was handled at different levels. From where you're sitting, from a bird's eye view, how deep does the rot run in Transnet? How low down are you going to have to dig? And is this a linear process? What I'm trying to get you to tell me is, how ill is Transnet? And how soon will you be able to start fixing it? How deep do you still need to go?
Let me give you two responses, Karine. The first is that Transnet employs more than 50,000 people, and if you add the temporary and casual workers, project-based workers, almost 60,000 people. And we would like to believe that most of them are honest, hardworking people, and that goes from the very junior people through to people who are currently part of the executive. So we do not follow the approach where we taint or distrust everyone. Transnet itself is an organization with deep institutional capability, and they deliver a really, really necessary service within South Africa. And they've done that, and in a very positive way. And so we must, first of all, not allow that the current wave of procurement irregularities and other matters taints the entire organization. It taints specific individuals and other organizations, suppliers who are involved in it. So that's the first answer. Transnet is not a sick organization that is falling apart.
All right.
The second part is that the honest answer to your question is we don't know how deep it is, but we can at the same time tell you we will not leave any stone unturned. We will not rest until we have followed the trail, but at the same time, there's the surgical part, which is incisive and digging deep and discovery, and then extracting that what you refer to rot out of the organization. And at the same time, there's the healing part. There's building. There is giving the employees confidence, building up the morale, reconsolidating the level of coherence at the senior executive level throughout the organization. So it is a multidimensional approach to not just clean up and excise the part which is sick and continues to cause the decay, whilst at the same time healing and focusing the organization to deliver a very, very vital role in our South African economy.
Yeah, put differently, the medicine can't be worse than the illness. Thank you very much, Transnet board member, Professor Edward Kiesvetter.